KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
I announce my candidacy for mayor of Seattle.
Well, I actually got really excited when I heard Speaker Boehner talking about Plan B because I thought finally they've made progress on a really important women's health issue that I've been working on.
We're going to need to work on making access to mental health care at least as easy as access to a gun. We're going to need to look more closely at a culture that all too often glorifies guns and violence.
President,
the fact that we can't prevent every act of violence doesn't mean we can't steadily reduce the violence and prevent the very worst violence.
Stepped on the president there. I apologize. President Obama talking about the aftermath, the shootings in Connecticut, what he would do. You also heard Patty Murray talking a little bit about the changes to what she thought was happening with John Boehner's plan to Plan B. Some of the issues we'll take up this hour on weekday with our resident journalists. That's fair enough.
We live here. Yeah. Yes, we actually live here. I have a little cot in the back room.
Oh, I knew that would have been a mistake. Resident was a mistake. Jody Balter, who is the assistant political editor at the Seattle Times.
Good morning.
Good to see you. Eli Sanders, associate editor at The Stranger. Good
morning.
To see you.
Nice to see you.
And Knute Berger, who writes the Mossback column at crosscut.com. Man's usually on time. I'm sure he'll be here soon.
He's in transit.
In transit. He might be in transit for that matter, right?
Actual transit.
Doesn't he live down near the lake there in Medicine Valley? Did you have more ice? Did you guys have ice on? Did you have ice on Capitol Hill this morning?
I'm on Capitol Hill. We just had really cold rain and a very cold ride down to the studios here.
Oh, yes. I'll be honest with you, Eli.
Yeah.
All week I rode.
Well, that's better than me. I rode
today.
All week.
I have to do some.
Did you whip out today? Is that what you're saying?
I did.
Okay.
But it was cold.
It was cold.
I rode here.
Wish I had one of those masks.
Yeah, from the top of Capitol Hill down here.
Yeah, that is a...
Well, according to Nick Bond, that shall continue.
Great.
That weather will continue.
But the days will be getting longer, at least.
Yes.
I think the solstice is today,
This morning. It was at 3 o'clock this morning, so tomorrow becomes a longer day.
By the way, we gave you each gifts. I just will tell you that the gift that we gave Skip, which is a squishy ball, represents the fireball for the end of the world.
It's
orange and with red tints. I mean, yellow with red tints on the edge. But the world did not apparently end.
Oh, come on. We have time.
No. It was supposed to happen at 3:11 a.m. Pacific time.
Yeah. All right. Well, then we don't have time.
We all slept through it and missed it.
We missed it. Let me, and Eli's gift is quite appropriate for our first topic because we got you a plastic wrapped gun. It was to represent the run on guns. Wasn't trying to be funny, but tragedy. Well, there was this run on guns,
right.
But now we have even an update, as you heard in the news,
mm-hmm.
And we'll play just a short clip of it too. Wayne LaPierre, the CEO of the NRA, had a press conference. He did call for that the nation should create a national database of the mentally ill. Killers, robbers, rapers, gang members are running rampant in the country, he says, and we're not prosecuting them, so violent crime is increasing. And he said the media is hiding the fact that there are horribly violent video games, music videos, and movies being passed on as entertainment. And in the press conference, LaPierre explained that while we protect banks and stadiums, the president and members of Congress, here's how we should protect our schools as well. This is what he says is the NRA going to propose going forward.
The NRA is going to bring all its knowledge, all its dedication, and all its resources to develop a model national school shield emergency response program for every single school in America that wants it. From armed security to building design and access control to information technology to student and teacher training. This multifaceted program will be developed by the very best experts in the field.
All right, so that's Wayne LaPierre. Armed guards in every school. Because he said, wouldn't you rather have somebody... First of all, he said, wouldn't we have saved lives? Are you going to tell me we wouldn't have saved lives if we hadn't had an armed guard in that school? But NRA doubling down on their policies, yes?
Well, it was very interesting all week long as many people came forward to discuss gun control, no gun control, whatever it would be, just different takes on this, mental health, video games. There was the whole menu of discussions that naturally would flow from the massacre in Connecticut. But the NRA announced very early in the week, it seemed, that they would have a press conference, as you just heard. They didn't say what it was. They said it would be a, quote, meaningful contribution to the discussion on gun control. And so now today that we have this statement, the highlight of it probably is the armed guards at every school. The folks are left to wonder if, in fact, that was a meaningful contribution. Would that help? Would that make a difference? And what does that say about how we're going to approach this? We're going to ramp up the number of guns and the number of people who are armed?
The other highlight from the press conference, the visual highlight, was the protesters standing up in front of Wayne LaPierre and unfurling this giant pink poster that said, if I'm remembering it right, the NRA is killing our children, which kind of distills, what the NRA needs to explain at the moment, which is how they intend to protect America's children from more massacres like the one we found or we saw in Newtown. And I'm not sure that armed guards at every school are the answer for that. I mean, so we should say, Steve, the gift that you got me here is a plastic-wrapped plastic gun, which I guess the idea is that I could guard our door here in the studio with it. It shoots little...
The stuff you say, you might have
plastic
to.
Balls. but, it, you know, just think about beyond the upping the number of guns in circulation problem that would create, think about the cost. How many schools are there in the United States, and how much does it cost to hire an armed guard at every one of them for every year with benefits and so on? That you're talking about billions of dollars, and you're also talking about perpetuating a logic of, I don't know what to call it except mutually assured destruction. The answer to other people's destructive tendencies is to up our own destructive power, which just will cause them to up their own destructive tendencies, and then we'll need to buy an even stronger gun. And who does that benefit? That benefits the people who fund the NRA, the gun manufacturers.
Well, it does. You can see the argument, though, of mutual, you know, escalation, right? That's the path they're going down.
Isn't that how they phrased it? They said the only
solution to a bad guy
is a good guy with a gun.
Right.
A bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun.
That's the same logic that had us, you know, broadly, it's the same logic that had us sitting with enough missiles pointed at the Soviet Union to destroy the entire planet, and the Soviet Union doing the same thing. And eventually we realized the absurdity of that and started to scale back. I mean, it really is the same broad logic, and it doesn't ultimately, I don't think, make any sense or make us safer.
Yeah, well, it's not the same as dealing with a small number of individual nations and negotiating that way. You're dealing with literally tens of millions of individuals who are heavily armed, so it's a much more, you know, complicated and chaotic situation.
And more dangerous.
And, well, yeah.
When I was watching this week unfold and the reactions unfold, one of the more interesting things to me was not sort of the predictable Dianne Feinsteins, there's two N's in Dianne, I learned, and the, you know, Frank Lautenberg and the sort of predictable folks who were for gun control. What was more interesting was the idea that some people who had been against gun control would maybe change positions. And that was the senator from West Virginia, Joe Manchin. And going out the door, running out the door, was Massachusetts Senator Scott Brown, who said he had been very much against gun control, but now was for it. So I think it's more interesting when you get to a point where people who maybe had an entrenched position begin to say something different. I think that's one way that the dialogue becomes something different. It's not the same people talking.
Sorry, I made that noise because I had to turn the television on. Because the other thing that's going to happen in the next few minutes is that the president's going to announce that John Kerry is his choice to be Secretary of State. And it is possible, if the president turns this into a news conference, and not just an announcement, that we'll go to that press conference, because I would imagine, especially after the NRA's statement, that reporters are going to try to ask him questions in response to that. So we may go to that, and I turned the television on because we have to monitor that.
Well, there was a segue in there if John Kerry's got a new jobs.
Well, that's what made me think about Scott. It. How does that work in Massachusetts? He's appointed by the governor at this point, right? But then they have to have a special election, I think.
Yes, yes.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how that works.
Someone.
So I was just wondering if Scott Brown might be thinking of that election.
Oh, probably.
Just perhaps, maybe. I don't know where I get this stuff.
Yeah, well, I think there's a concern among Democrats that he would actually be the favorite in an election like that. That would be, and they'd have to come up with a Kennedy or somebody to
a baby Kennedy to hold that seat.
Well, you could see how he might be, right?
There's the theory that floats around this is the long game the Republicans were actually playing with the Susan Rice debacle. That, you know, fine, Kerry can be Secretary of State, but this gives them a shot at getting his Senate seat.
Don't you think that was?
It seems
pretty logical.
Yeah, it makes certain sense.
Somebody had the thought, shall we say.
Because
more than one somebody's had that
thought. Susan Rice isn't the only person who comes on talk shows and says partial truths based on, you know, lack of information. I believe that's how it operates in Washington State. By the way, you all might have seen the Pew report that came out. Public, and this is, of course, or, you know, instant poll. Public attitude towards gun control has shown modest change in the wake of last week's deadly shooting. 49% say it is more important to control gun ownership, while 42% say it's more important to protect the right of Americans to own guns. First time that that's been a shift, actually.
But the problem with a poll like that is the timing of it, of course.
Right.
Because people's passions, you know, and that is one of the narratives of the gun and massacre story in our country, is that we have a pattern, we follow one, where we get outraged for a period of time, and then we are somehow, you know, immune to this after a period of time. We get sort of used to it, and that is one of the storylines here. And so this week, actually, very, very interestingly, there were a couple of things on Facebook and Twitter and all that where people were mindful of that trend and said, let's sign this pledge and say that you will work on this monthly or every week, that you won't forget.
Right.
Because, well, that is part of the story.
And that's why we had Tina Podlodowski and Bruce Harrell, for many reasons, coming out with the idea of an initiative, Podlodowski arguing that at least an initiative would have the dialogue ongoing as we come up to an election, which is interesting. So we're not immune or unfamiliar with gun violence this year especially. And you had written a column, it was back in September, you wrote a column about gun control, right? When we've been in the midst of, in Washington State, this question about the violence.
We had you know, the cafe massacre. We've had other incidents. An assault weapons ban was proposed in the legislature, 2 years ago, with the death of a young man in the Leschi, Aaron Sullivan. We have a history of locally, meaning in Washington State, of these things happening, legislation being proposed, then dying in committee or not getting out of Olympia. And this, to me, is interesting. It ties a little bit to, you know, the topic of who runs the legislature, who's chairing those committees, because the issues in Olympia are not just fiscal issues. We're focused on that because of the budget issues and the budget and the education mandate. But there are all kinds of other issues. Gun control is one of those. I think it'd be very difficult to get certain kinds of gun control legislation through the legislature in the makeup. Things pretty much have to happen at the state level here for it to be significant. I thought Tina Podlodowski's idea of an initiative is a really good one. It'd have to be the right initiative. And I think her point about the debate, and it just might pass. I mean, gay marriage, pot legalization, there are things whose time has come, and their time will never come unless you keep pushing and trying to work these things simply through the regular legislative channels has not worked. and especially has not worked, you know, in the wake of some of these violent incidents.
And your point is a good one. With Rodney Tom's coup in the Senate, he's installed.
Is that what you guys are calling it? In the Stranger?
Isn't that what it is?
I think the word coup was used pretty widely.
It's a Senate coup. It's a Senate coalition government.
Well, that's Rodney Tom's talk. That's the coup leadership.
It did seem to be the battle of stationery this week, where they had stationery coming at you. But
it's worth pointing out that Rodney Tom, as leader of the coup in the Senate, has installed as chair of the, I think it's the Law and Justice Committee, if I'm thinking of it rightly, but that whatever committee it is that would first hear any gun legislation is now chaired by a senator from Spokane who has an A-plus rating from the NRA. So if you think that any, you know, gun control legislation is passing the Senate this year in Washington State with that guy at the head of the committee that hears, you know, has the first hearing on such legislation, you're crazy. And David Goldstein has pointed this out a few times in The Stranger.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing just because the people who control those committees control what gets to the floor, what actually gets voted on. So that's why control of the legislature is so consequential, even if, and you know, they've got Pam Roach has been resurrected and put on a committee. I don't think it's a gun control committee.
She lost her wallet though, and she needs your help. Did you get those spam emails?
So funny. Yeah, but Pam Roach was the jump ball in all of this. You know, I half expected the Democrats to offer her some big position to pull her away because there's no love lost between her and her fellow Republicans.
Well, let's come back to that question of the coup and some other issues. We're reviewing the news of the week with Joni Balter, with Eli Sanders, and with Knut Berger. We had gifts, Skip, from the Dollar Tree. I don't want you to think we went crazy. Your little bouncy plastic ball represents the orb of the Earth if it would have exploded. With the end of the world.
Right. It's the Mayan.
Yeah, it's the Mayan calendar.
The Mayan Earth explosion
ball.
Ball.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
But and you can play with it because apparently we're okay now. All right, we'll take a break. This is Weekday.
Good morning, it's 10:22. You're tuned to 94.9 KUOW Seattle. I'm Andy Hurst. Researchers know that placebos can be effective medical treatments for all kinds of issues. They just don't know why. Later today, we'll talk with a Harvard Medical School professor who's uncovered some really interesting facts about how placebos work. That comes your way this afternoon at 12:20.
Support for KUOW comes from Amazing Grace Spiritual Center, presenting its fourth annual Mystical Christmas Celebration. The hidden meaning of an ancient story is revealed through lessons, carols, and candlelighting Sunday, December 23rd at 5 p.m. at Seattle Unity Church. More at AmazingGraceSpiritualCenter.org.
Clouds and rain, 41 degrees in the U District. We're expecting rain the rest of today, the high in the low 40s. Cloudy tonight, chance of rain, the low in the mid-30s. It's going to be cloudy, rainy, and breezy tomorrow, the high in the low 40s.
We are reviewing the news of this week. We started taking a look at the press conference that was just completed with the NRA, calling for an armed guard in every school. And President Obama is going to announce John Kerry as his choice for Secretary of State, we believe. If that turns into a press conference, we will go to it. We were talking about the change in the leadership in the Washington State Legislature. The coup, I believe, is how Eli put it. Just a little bit for those of us who are just so kind of scratching our heads.
Or shopping or something. Distracted.
Reading books. What actually has happened?
So what has occurred is that Rodney Tom.
This is for the next legislature.
Looking ahead to January. The background of this is the Democrats met. They selected State Senator Ed Murray as the Senate Majority Leader of the Democrats, who did numerically win the election. But meanwhile, two folks who last year, Tim Sheldon and Rodney Tom, who were part of the coup last year on the budget.
Roadkill Caucus, they were called?
They are of the Roadkill Caucus. But so they went, and Jim Castema was with them for the budget coup also. He ran for Secretary of State. But anyway, these two have been meeting with Republicans and offered to create what they call, not a coup, but a coalition government. And they have this nifty stationery, which led to the Battle of the Stationery this week, and to create this coalition government with the key committees chaired by Republicans. They have to go in and change the Senate rules to do this. So this actually hasn't occurred yet, but that is their plan. And they will name, you know, as we mentioned here, people to certain committees that they wish. So that would mean that the Democrats, numerically and otherwise, are in the minority. And that is what Ed Murray, who thought he was the Senate Majority Leader, said. He'd rather be in a real minority rather than this sort of strange construct that he didn't feel included Democrats in key positions. And so that is what has occurred in Olympia. Think that place is dull? Uh-uh.
Although Ed is sort of legalistically fighting this until January, at least by pointing out that the rules don't allow the coup leadership to do anything until they go to the rather extreme step of changing the rules to allow their coup to happen. And that will, as Joni points out, that will have to happen, you know, in public on the Senate floor.
And no doubt that they'll have their caucus and plus the two members.
Plus the two, because that's already been agreed to. The other factor of this is that, and this is what's making some people angry at Rodney Tom, is that Rodney Tom would thus install himself as the Senate Majority Leader. And so there are certain questions about whether if this was so good for everybody, why does it advance him? But he says he's doing this
for the good
bipartisanship and the good of the people and the good of his district.
Yeah, there's an interesting strategy because the Rodney Tom plan was announced, and it had the veneer of being a sort of power sharing with the Republicans in charge because of these two Democrats that had kind of flipped caucuses.
We should remember that Rodney Tom was a Republican.
That's right. He was a Republican. He switched to being a Democrat. He's been elected as a Democrat in his current role. But he also represents a district that doesn't much care about party labels particularly. But he obviously saw an advantage to being a Democrat over a Republican. So he offered a thing where the Republicans would chair some committees, Democrats would chair other committees, but most of the important budget committees and other things went to the Republicans. The Democrats kind of counteroffered with let's just have dual Republican-Democrat chairman for all the committees. If you want a coalition, let's make it a truly shared type of thing. That was rejected by the Republicans. And Murray has said, as Joni said, that in some ways, you know, he'd just rather be minority leader and let them deal with, you know, the budget will be on them.
So that's what Dow Constantine said yesterday when he was here. He said, okay, so now if they're in charge, they'll have to figure out where the $1 billion comes for education.
And some other cuts that have to be made as well, as you saw in the governor's budget, that there's, you know, they have to cover another hole. It's not as big as it had been in the last 2 or 3 years, but it's
still in the, with the new spending plus the cuts, it's still in the, 2 to 3 billion range. It's still, is it 1 billion? It's a lot of money.
It's enough. So how does this affect incoming governor Jay Inslee? Does it have an impact on him?
Well, of course it does, because Jay Inslee's coming in and he was thinking he was working with two chambers that were Democratic, in other words, easier to work with. But he now has to, and he said this, he said he's willing to work with anybody. And so it'll be the governor and it'll be the House, which has a pretty sizable Democratic majority, sort of trying to deal with this strange hybrid that they don't really know how to predict, you know, exactly how it will function. One thought I had about Rodney Tom I just wanted to throw in here, as you mentioned, in 2006, he switched from Republican to Democrat. And then he was, you know, one of the three who participated in the budget coup that put a Democrat working with Republicans. And I sometimes just wonder, you know, some people maybe don't fit in a political party. And he may just be one of those people that doesn't really fit in either party. So,
His district is not as flip-flopping as he is. His district is trending more and more Democratic, and his district voted strongly for Obama. His district, you know, supports health care reform. I would bet, although I haven't seen polling on this, but given all the other things that his district supports, I would bet they support some form of gun control. And so, you know, he...
No, we don't know Rodney's position on gun control. I don't.
No, I'm talking about his district as a whole.
I know. I'm just wondering what his is. I don't know what his is.
But remember, there is a big chunk of his district that's very red when it comes to that went for McKenna and for Romney. Which is the points communities, which is where a lot of money is, where a lot of political money is for both parties. But a lot of it comes out of that.
He himself is from Medina, although he likes to say he's from Bellevue.
Medina and Hunts Point and the other points communities went heavily for Romney.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, you can. Yep.
Parse it out. So the Washington Supreme Court ruled that the legislature isn't making the progress it's supposed to make on funding K through 12 education, the McCleary school funding lawsuit there and their decision. So what does that do? The Republicans came out and said, well, this just shows that the only thing we can do is fund education first budget. Fund education first budget means, for example, all the conversation we've had this week about mental health funding would be in danger because they're not raising revenues and they're looking for cash.
Well, the court is keeping the pressure on. And, you know, in other words, they're not backing down from anything they said last January in the McCleary. This is a reprise in my mind of the governor's race where the candidates were talking about spending $1 billion more. The governor came out with a complicated plan that would spend $1 billion more. But the whole idea and the fight between them is, can you do it without raising taxes? And don't forget, the governor-elect is in quite a spot on that because he said after one of the debates that he not only was not going to raise taxes, he would veto tax increases. Well, then what's a tax increase? The governor sort of, with her budget, you know, was extending surcharges that were supposed to expire, and she was doing things that could maybe not be called that. So it's tricky terrain for each and every one of them.
And what boxes him in even more firmly is the fact that Republicans essentially control the Senate now.
And it's interesting because they're really taking the sort of same position national Republicans are taking in terms of saying that they're even more conservative because, you know, even Boehner has been willing to consider some tax increase with the tax rate expiration, the thing is, it's not, we haven't made it illegal to raise taxes in Washington state. We have just voted for a high bar. And in other words, if the legislature wanted to, I mean, if there was the will, they two-thirds of them could vote for.
Or they could put it out for a vote.
They could vote for increased revenues. And so, you know, in terms of education, where there tends to be there's a consensus that the money has to be spent and it's a good thing to spend that money, they could if they had the will, and it would require real leadership to get to that point. The problem is even the more moderate Republicans are drawing this line, which is essentially the policy that McKenna was going to implement, which was we're going to come up with that $1 billion for education, but that means we're going to cut everything else because we're not going to look at the revenue side. And the only area they're really looking at raising taxes or proposing raised taxes is with, you know, a transportation plan, which, of course, would.
But the governor did provide, and it was had a little pea shell quality to it, where she would raise some fuel taxes and gradually move the cost of funding
school bus transportation
into the transportation budget and then free up general fund, as I understand it. I may have missed a couple crosses here. Free up general fund money to pay for education over time. And so, you know, there are these sort of, you know, account shifts that go on and clever ideas that at least will be trotted out as time goes on.
Now, the one thing that could really change this dynamic, this whole dynamic that we're talking about, is if the state Supreme Court finally delivers its ruling on the two-thirds majority requirement and its constitutionality. One would hope that they would deliver it before the legislative session starts, but, you know, they're all elected. Maybe they have some sort of incentive to delay until after the legislative session is over, although that seems that would be very unfortunate. But if they strike it down, as a lot of state constitutional law experts think they should, then we will only have to get a majority in the state legislature to raise taxes. Now, we don't necessarily have that in the state Senate right now, but we're a lot closer to that potential than we are to a two-thirds majority in the state Senate. So it could really change things if we hear something from the state Supreme Court soon.
We still haven't heard from the people who are going to demand, or have we? Have we heard from the people who are going to demand the funding for education that's promised while not sacrificing the social services that are part and parcel to having a safe education system?
They call that the legislative session.
Is that one we'll hear from them?
Yeah,
but do you think they're mobilized? They're galvanized?
Well, you know, I don't know specifically, but that is the nature of this. As you sit down, there will be Education Day. There will be, you know,
right.
You know, various days down there where the folks show up and they speak.
But that,
you're touching on one of my pet peeves, which is the idea that we've siloed how we look at these things in such a way that social services are not education, or that museums and libraries and archives are not education. In other words, when we look at increasing spending on education, it doesn't do you any good to pour more money into the system if kids can't eat. You know, if kids don't have after school programs or whatever. I mean, there's a whole context that has to occur. And then, of course, this extends to the gun safety argument, too, which is it's not just banning assault weapons. But, you know, I think some people who are critiquing our both our culture, but also our other spending priorities are right in saying that it's a bigger picture deal. And so the idea that the money on education specifically means school money, I think, is a mistake.
And just to go back to that idea that we heard from Wayne LaPierre earlier this morning of, you know, an officer paid to stand at every school with a gun, where is the money in our state legislature to fund that? Can you imagine how much more bankrupt our state would be if we had to do that in the state? Because it's not going to come from the federal.
Well, you know, the NRA, I wasn't here at the very beginning of the show, so I didn't get to weigh in exactly on the NRA thing. But if you know, the NRA does not represent all gun owners. There are plenty that don't belong to the NRA. If you look at the NRA's political agenda, you cannot sever it from right-wing politics. And they say, well, no, we're not political. You can be a liberal or a conservative. But the fact is they work to elect the very people who vote to cut spending for law enforcement at the national level, who went after the money that Clinton got for cities to increase the police departments. The Republicans went after that. They elect people who will never vote for the kind of federal funding for those police officers. So it's a completely disingenuous argument to make.
Never mind the money that they vote to slash from social services or mental health funding, and then they stand up and say that, as Wayne LaPierre did in this press conference, that the nation is filled with scary, crazy people who are coming to shoot you, you know, and so you better have three guns because they might have one. But, and it's just worth pointing out, since we circled back around to the school armed guard idea, that there were armed guards at Virginia Tech. And I believe Columbine also had an armed guard. And so this idea that somehow prevents these massacres is just obviously fallacious. It didn't work in the past.
Yeah, well, they just need to arm the kindergartners. And then you would have...
Didn't we have that this
they
week?
Could, or they could rush the shooter, as the one columnist suggested.
Well, there was a sixth grader in Utah who did show up. It wasn't clear if he was told by his parents that had come up to go to school with this gun because then he would be safer. So, well, anyway, one question I have about the whole NRA thing, just play along to a point and ask the question, under this scenario, would the federal government say it's our responsibility and so we'd pay for these armed guards in every local school? And that sort of flies in that whole argument that schools are local, that schools are state, you know, the purview of the state. So how does this whole bit work? Anyway.
Well, as Brian, our producer, pointed out, maybe if the NRA is calling for police in schools, it's a jobs program, and they could
stimulus
funding. All right, let me. The thing about education is we know NRA has Wayne LaPierre who can stand up and say, I am the leader. I galvanize. This is how we should approach this. People were waiting to hear what NRA would have to say. Who's the leader who gets the $1 billion for education funding in this state?
Well, the leader supposedly is the governor and working in concert with the House and the Senate. But we have a very, you know, we shall see. It shall roll out over 105 long days.
Yeah. Well, it's Jay Inslee, it's Rodney Tom, and it's Frank Chop.
Yep.
And on the gun control.
And the court.
On the gun control debate, I was talking to Senator Adam Klein, who, you know, is a Democrat from the Seattle area and would have been in charge of this committee that in the Senate that would deal with gun law reform had there not been the coup. Oh,
I bet there are many people who are glad about that, huh?
Well, people on the NRA side of things, certainly. And he was saying that, you know, to your point, Steve, a problem with the gun control debate is that we don't have an equally well-funded, equally rabid group on the opposing side that stands up for gun control and that pushes back against the NRA. We have, you know, Washington ceasefire here, but it has its limits. We have the Brady campaign. It has its limits as well. And, you know, he, as a legislator, is almost asking, in fact, this is what he said, for cover from the people. You know, he needs a popular push for gun control reform to get any traction in the legislature.
What is interesting is if you think back, oh, just a few weeks to the presidential election and the congressional election, gun control never came up. Everyone was afraid of it.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. Let's talk about the mayor's race in Seattle and some other local issues. This is Weekday.
We have clouds and rain, 43 degrees right now in the U District. We're expecting rain the rest of today, the high right around 43. It's going to be cloudy tonight with a chance of rain, the low in the mid-30s. Cloudy, rainy, and breezy again tomorrow, the high in the low 40s.
Support for KUOW comes from Puget Sound Energy with a reminder that a loud thumping clothes washer might mean it's time to upgrade to an energy-saving model. More information is available at pse.com/appliances.
The discovery of thousands of new oil fields, revolutionary new technologies. It's been a big year for fossil fuels.
The world is full of hydrocarbons, but the question is, at what price does it cost to produce them?
The cost to companies and consumers, and the impact on renewable sources of power. The Year in Energy, Sunday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
That story and much more Sunday morning from 5 until 10 o'clock. You're tuned to 94.9 KUOW Seattle, news and information. It's 10:42.
Support for KUOW comes from Washington's Lottery, supporting the Washington Opportunity Pathways account to help fund higher education scholarships in Washington. More at walottery.com.
We are reviewing the news of this week before the Christmas break. We're not taking a break, but I guess a couple of days. And then we'll be back next week. Perhaps we should look at the whole year next week. You guys can do a whole year, can't you? With Knute Berger, with Eli Sanders, with Joni Balter. So just before we go to local issues.
This is a local issue.
Skip got the flaming Mayan fireball as a gift. Eli got the run on guns with his shooter of like rubber
ping
foam.
Pong balls. Of hollow plastic balls.
Oh, they're ping pong balls.
They're like ping pong
balls. Go ahead. Yeah. Go, I'm ready.
All right.
Misfire. He's a violent person.
That's the problem. And yeah. Joni got a penguin paddle ball.
A penguin paddle ball.
Which I thought represented, by the way, these are all Katie's ideas. I thought it represented the negotiations between Boehner and Obama over the fiscal cliff, well, but you guys had
well, perhaps, but Eli had the good line, and he said he thought that hitting this paddle ball was exactly what Boehner and Obama were doing when they were gathered together, because they couldn't think of anything else to do. So I think it works both ways. What do you think? Thank you for the gift.
I think we'll be going over the fiscal cliff. What do you guys think?
I think Boehner will be playing one of those once he's deposed as Speaker.
Yeah. He had a rough day yesterday.
He did not. His plan B unraveled. did not make
and
it.
And then
into
Patty Murray, who knew, thinks she's a comedian.
Well, only
said she thought that Plan B, the fact that the Republicans were talking about Plan B as a fiscal cliff remedy, meant that they were suddenly concerned about women's issues.
Well,
I didn't think she's got a sense of humor. That person. Yeah.
Only Congress could make looking like going over the fiscal cliff look like a good idea. You know, it's at this point, it's just sort of, oh, just go off, please. And
we're
then,
running Congress then, over the over some sort of cliff.
Yeah, like the buffalo, you know. And it, I think, you know, what we saw yesterday with Boehner trying to get his so-called Plan B passed, which would have cut taxes for all Americans or kept the tax cuts for all Americans except for people who are millionaires.
Who earn a million.
Who earn a million. Yes, that's right. So they're probably more than millionaires. And his own party rejected it and really kind of undercut his talking points and his negotiating power. And there's a good argument has been made all along, but now it looks even more reasonable is just to let the things expire. The Republicans in a panic are going to then have to basically concede to what the president wants to do. And it's really hard to see how, you know, any kind of agreement's going to come together before that.
And in the meantime, they did pass the defense spending bill for this year, which is about the highest bill in a while. So they did come to agreement on that.
I think, you know, one thing that's benefiting, at least right now, from the negotiations is Obama's reputation as a negotiator. He, you know, got a lot of flack last year for basically negotiating with himself over the debt ceiling, I think it was. And he's just kind of played it cool, stuck to, for the most part, to his demands. He's moved a little bit toward the Republicans. And then he's just sat there and, you know, played paddle ball, as we were joking about. And
giving him my paddle ball.
And let us run toward the cliff, which, as Knut's pointing out, is not that much of a problem. It's not exactly a cliff. It's more like a, you know, long, gradual downslope. And there's plenty of time in the first 3 or 4 days of 2013, if we want to reinstitute a number of these measures, which will now be tax cuts.
Two observations, though. One was that in recent years, in very recent years, December was the time of action. The lame duck Congresses were more productive. So this was surprising yesterday, I thought, for some folks.
Yeah, and, but it didn't work.
And Obama also seemed to have a message, a takeaway message from the trauma of Connecticut, and that was, that's a big problem. We in Congress in Washington, D.C. should be able to do the basic work of government. He seemed to have that implied in some of the things that he was saying. Like, come on, guys, we can do this.
I think the dynamics of that lame duck has changed in the last couple of years, because in the two years ago during that lame duck session where they got so much done,
wild.
A lot of Republicans were very critical of other Republicans who cooperated in that lame duck session, saying you made Obama look good, and that's never going to happen again. And Mitch McConnell and those guys said, you know, our job now is to make him look bad.
Yeah. All right. Peter Steinbrück's running for mayor of Seattle. How does he change the dynamic of the race, Knut? I'm going to go around the table there. But.
Okay. Peter, I think, is a great addition to the race. I've been saying, you know, I think this this has a potential of being one of the most interesting and best mayoral races in a while. I think Peter brings kind of an interesting different mix. One is that Peter is very clear about his vision. He's running on conviction. He's running on passion. And, you know, his vision is of a bigger, denser, sustainable Seattle, but one that he points out is a city for all, meaning it's a city that does well and is habitable for rich people, poor people, people of all kinds. And this is a central tenet that drives his – he's an architect by training, and it drives his passion for planning and the way that you kind of build social justice into the physical landscape and don't let developers just do whatever the market wants. And I think that he He'll be very articulate on that. He's also, interestingly, probably the most experienced candidate at City Hall, having been a council member for 10 years. So he's got more experience at City Hall than the other candidates in the race. So he's going to, I think, have this interesting thing where he's going to be somewhat of an activist in the sense he even said at his announcement, he said, you know, I'm an activist like Mike McGinn. He relates to that thing, but I think he feels like he's somebody who can actually get things done more effectively and has a better vision.
And I do note that he ended his consulting contracts in getting ready for this mayoral.
Yeah, not all of them.
Not all. And that was my question. Who is he still with?
He
ended the one with the Port of Seattle.
Yeah. He ended the one with the Port. He ended the one with the
South Lake Union Group.
But he's still continuing to consult for WSDOT on historic properties that are affected by the deep bore tunnel. And I think he's got one other. I can't remember what it is.
Huh. All right. Eli? Peter Steinbrück?
Yeah. One hurdle that he has immediately, and I think ongoing, is his opposition to the new sports arena, to the basketball stadium. He does not want it built in SoTo, and that puts him on the outside, I think, of the pack of mayoral candidates so far. I don't think there's anyone else running for mayor who's saying that. And, you know, there may be a constituency for that, but I don't know if it's enough to put him into the mayor's office. And I think that will be something that he gets hammered on during the campaign. Another issue is just the simple math of this. You know, we've sort of laughed at McGinn's 25% polling, and that is terrible. But actually, if you start to divide up the electorate, you know, six different ways, which is what we're doing right now. Do we have six or seven candidates at this point?
I think we're at six.
So
I'll count them for you while you're saying.
Anyway, okay, you count them, and I'll just say that the simple math is once you get above four candidates, if McGinn can hold on to his 25%, then he's doing great. I mean, the more the merrier.
Yes, six.
As far as he's concerned.
Six if you include Ed Murray.
And you know,
why wouldn't you include Ed Murray?
He's in.
He's in.
Well, he's an exploratory committee to explore his exploratory.
But he's going to have a lot more time on his hands now that he's been shoved aside.
And he's got money.
And maybe seven if Ron Sims gets in. And
yeah, Bruce Harrell is on the way. And
that's right.
And there may be others.
Hmm. It really does come down to taking 100% and dividing it by whatever final number we're going to have here. We do have a woman who stepped into the race this week. Not a very well-known person, but, you know, a community activist. And so people have been trying to parse this math over and over again. So how does a Peter Steinbrück come in? He's for lower, you know, some lower density. He's got a little bit of old Seattle, considering his ancestry. His, you know, his father was famous for saving the Pike Place Market. His father has a park named after him, so some people think Peter's a park. I mean, I think that helps, actually. And so you have to sit there and figure out who do the environmentalists go for, who do the people who prefer women candidates, business candidates, law and order candidates. Doing this math is, I guess we'll be doing it for about a year, but it's very difficult to keep slicing the way that it will end up.
What are the dominant issues going to be? So do you, and I want to start with the question of the arena. Do you think that the arena is going to be one of those dominant issues which could separate, for example, Steinbrück out from McGinn?
I think I don't think it will be a dominant issue, but it could be a potential difficult issue, which is that I don't think McGinn is going to be touting, I mean, the arena deal specifically, because I don't think a lot of he's got everybody, every Sonics fan who lives in the city of Seattle who loves the arena deal is voting for McGinn. So, you know, I don't think that he is going to broaden his appeal by pushing that. But the pitfall, and I think Eli's dead on this, the pitfall for Peter is if he gets cast as the McGinn of the tunnel for the arena, is he going to be the guy who blocks something around which there has been some consensus? But as Steinbrück pointed out, he's fully supportive of the process that is now in place moving forward with the EIS and the scoping. And he will be a real watchdog on that, I think, because the question is, will the environmental impact statement, that part of that process, they'll have to look at alternatives to that site. And will they do that fairly, or will they do that in an unfair way? So I think he'll kind of watchdog that process. But he's not protesting the process at this point. He's simply disagreeing with the one particular outcome.
Well, or he's hoping the process delivers his preferred outcome, which is a way to move the arena out of Soto.
Soto.
And, I think with
and maybe out of Seattle.
Yes.
He talked about
that.
That
would be,
maybe
no,
he's,
that would be death for a Seattle mayoral candidate to be arguing for. Yeah. And I think, you know, the major dynamic when you have so many candidates, people are going to be looking for a reason to disqualify someone in their mind. And that, I think, is going to be where this most hurts Peter. Like, oh, he's not for the arena? Okay, well, let me just move him out of the list of contenders and consider these other guys.
I heard him say Bellevue when he made his announcement.
I've heard him say Bellevue. But when you take this number of candidates and start slicing and dicing, as I said a minute ago, you end up with, in Peter's case, so he already has a fellow city council member supporting him. He's a former city council member, but a current one, Nick Licata. What was Nick Licata's claim to fame? One of them. Well, he fought both of the other stadiums. And so that's an interesting alliance right there. They were, I remember when they were both on the council together, they were very close, you know, friendly, but also often voting together on various issues in the city. So, you know, there's a whole council to divide up if they all want to endorse, which they may not do. But just that whole slicing and dicing that's going on, it's a veritable Vegematic.
Is there, all right, so anybody, what are the other issues that you think? So
public safety, there's no way that after what this city has gone through in the last few years that public safety can be anything other than a top issue. Education, even though the city doesn't exactly run it, education is an issue in the mayor's race because people are looking to the city to support the schools to make that better because that is, you know, a front and center issue.
What do you think?
I agree with Joni. I think public safety is going to be the front and center issue that remains front and center throughout the next, you know, 12 months or so. And in that one, I think McGinn is in a hard spot. You know, he can be cast as someone who has not moved as quickly as people would have liked on reforming the police. I think there's a lot of potential material there for candidates to use against him. But no matter how it's used, this will be an issue going forward. The police department clearly needs to be reformed, and the next mayor will have a huge hand in doing that, and the public will care how the next mayor is going to go about doing that.
All right. I should have asked you guys to think about this beforehand, but, you know, he gave you those gifts.
Oh, no.
Got any gifts for the world at large? Any political candidates you think need some? I mean, I could think of a few people who might need a fireball, for example. At this point, I know you guys talked about Rob McKenna making the rounds of the editorial boards and sort of his farewell tour saying, I'm going to take some time off from public service. He might want that fireball.
He may want this thing.
He might want the paddle ball.
Paddle ball to, you know, to while away the hours until the next election.
Have we seen the last of Rob McKenna
in
elected races?
No, no, no. You know, what was interesting about what he said as he made his sort of on victory tour, I guess you call it, he focused heavily on the National Republican Party and how it had to change, rebrand to appeal more to younger voters, women, and minorities. And so that is, you know, he's obviously, and he said, I want to be part of that. I want to work for, you know, candidates who understand that and still have Republican principles.
All right. Let's leave it there and wish them all a Merry Christmas. I hope they find what they want under the tree. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Solstice, Kwanzaa. Have I missed anything? Happy Festivus.
Festivus.
Happy Atheist Celebration Time. I'm trying to get everything.
World didn't end.
Happy continuation of the world. The world is reborn, actually, after this after averting the disaster, right?
Right. The speedometer just went back to zero.
It's all back to zero. Knut Berger is an author. He writes at Crosscut. Eli Sanders is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, associate editor at The Stranger. Joni Balter, assistant political editor at The Seattle Times. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Buckley was with us today. We are also produced by Katie Sewell, Jason Pagano, Amin Al-Sadi, Alexander Garrettin, and Danielle Anthony Goodwin, our interns, and Andy Hurst, our engineer. Have a good holiday, folks.
Good morning, it's 10:59. We'll get an update from NPR News coming up next.
Support for KUOW comes from Top 10 Toys, whose mission is keeping healthy play alive with classic hands-on toys. Open every day in the Greenwood neighborhood of North Seattle and in Pacific Place in downtown Seattle.
This is 94.9 KUOW FM Seattle, 1340 Tumwater, 90.3 KQOW Bellingham, and Digital HD Services, a self-sustaining service of the University of Washington. I'm Andy Hurst.
This Saturday, it's holiday music from the swing years. I'm Amanda Wild. Sing along, dance along, and prance along with hand-picked.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.